Welcome back, everybody. Today, my special guest is Berto, or Alberto, from the ketogenic, or the men's ketogenic club that I'm in on Facebook. We'll go ahead and bring him over now. What's up, Berto? Thanks so much for being here, man.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Oh, of course. So, I've been seeing all your great posts in the group that we're in on Facebook, and you're always making awesome smoked meats and everything. So I had to talk to you.
Yeah, it's part of living in Texas. You gotta pick it up quickly, otherwise they kick you out of the state.
Dude, man, like I said, like just before we were on air, I was saying that I was in Texas in the beginning of May, and I didn't have a single bite of barbecue the entire time I was there. So it was kind of disappointing. Well, a lot disappointing. Now, there was a food truck that kept popping up when I was searching for barbecue when I was down in Austin. And it didn't open until 10:30 at night.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know like if that's one you had heard of or whatever, but I guess it was supposed to be like some awesome food truck. Because I was looking for brisket and I was looking for sausage.
Right.
You know.
Well, I mean, there's so many food trucks down here that I mean, they could have been anywhere, you know.
We
have food truck parks down here. We have entire parks of nothing but food trucks. You just pull up, you walk in, there's 6, 8. I got one right up the street. I think it's got like 4 or 5 food trucks. It's like park your car, hang out, pick a food truck, get your food, just chill. It's a thing down here.
I need to come back. We were almost toying with the idea of moving down there. Now, granted, we're not going to be moving there, but because I live in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay.
Well, like a western suburb of Indianapolis, Indiana. But my wife is an RN, and they're down in Austin. I'm guessing they're hurting for RNs, and they were posting that they were giving $30,000 sign-on bonuses.
Oh, wow.
So we were like, I was like, well, let's move to Austin.
Let's check it out.
but the fact that we'd have to bring our whole – like my stepdaughter and my grandbaby, but I'll have to come because I could not live 1,000 miles, 1,200 miles away from my granddaughter. It would be impossible.
Right.
So yeah, it'd be cool because, you know, live in the same city as Joe Rogan, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like unofficially like the low carb capital, you know, a lot of stuff happens down here and a lot of the low carb big names are down here and just all around the area. Everything just seems to happen around Austin for whatever reason. I live here.
So tell me, I'm not necessarily familiar with your story. So kind of run me through like how you got started with the whole ketogenic lifestyle.
It was like almost by accident because I painted cars for over 20 years. And then I switched from painting cars and went over to the service side to where now I train automotive painters. And I went to one of my shops. I hired a new painter. And turns out he was eating keto and like, I had never even really heard of it, knew nothing about it. And so, you know, part of the training process, you talk about cars, you paint a couple cars, you're like, hey, let's go grab something to eat. I'll buy, we'll continue the training process, you know, talk about more products and whatnot. And he's just like, oh, well, you know, I'm eating this diet, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you pick whatever. And turns out, you know, barbecue is 100% keto. So we went right down the street to a barbecue joint. And we just sat there chatting for the next hour. And he proceeded to pretty much blow my mind. And like, so like, I'm sitting here, this big old plate of brisket and everything. I'm like, so all this is like fair game. And he's like, yeah, I'm like, gotta look into this. Like, I might be okay with this. And so, you know, I've had all kinds of stomach issues and ulcerative colitis for most of my adult life. And so like in my head, I'm like, this ain't gonna work. You can't. Like, I got all kinds of gut issues. So I did a little bit of research and said there was a chance that it might help. So I'm like, well, you know what? I've tried every other diet. May as well give it, you know, it's 8-week trial, so I can scratch off a list and just get back to whatever. Probably down 10 pounds, felt amazing. All my stomach issues were pretty much completely gone. I was like forgetting to take my medicine because I didn't think I needed it, which I felt fine. And like that was just over 4.5 years ago now.
So I have a good friend of mine that has UC, right? And I've bugged him and bugged him to try this. And I know that there's no amount of bugging somebody that's going to make them want to do it if they don't want to. And he is very reliant on the medicine that he's on because of what it took to get that medicine and get him to where he can kind of live at least somewhat normal life, because he was bad for a while. And so, I mean, and I know the medicine that he's on, the side effects and the potential are terrifying, but have you noticed, so like, have you like found like full remission?
Oh yeah. I found full remission through the diet. I was actually, I always got to say, completely against my doctor's orders. I stopped taking my medication and I was med free for almost 3 years. And the only reason I had to get back on meds is because, you know, I go to every doctor's visit. My physicals were fine. My blood work was fine. Everything was 100% fine. I just had my dentist kept nagging me about an impacted wisdom tooth. And I'm like, nah, it's fine. It doesn't bother me. She's like, yeah, but it's going to. And for like a year and a half, every time I went to the dentist, that's the only thing they could find wrong with me medically, was this impacted wisdom tooth. So I decided, you know what? That's all they can find. Let's just yank this wisdom tooth out. We'll keep my dentist quiet. All my doctors will be happy. Well, not only did when I went to get it done, the surgeon yanked the tooth out, dislocated my jaw, and then the combination of heavy antibiotics and heavy painkillers just completely ruined my gut and actually threw me back into a flare. So if it wasn't, it's kind of funny now. In hindsight, getting my wisdom tooth pulled was the worst health decision I made in my adult life. But, you know, so I went back to a doctor, you know, had a scope. They confirmed that I was back in a flare. He put me on some pretty heavy meds, and this was late last year. But, I mean, since then, I'm back down to like back down to a really low maintenance dosage of medications. He knows that I don't want to be on medication, and, you know, he knows that my goal is to get off of them again. And I think I'm at a spot where I can. But for once, I actually really like this doctor. So instead of just bucking the system and doing it my way, I'm keeping him up to date and still staying on the meds. Just, you know, we're just communicating constantly. And eventually we're going to see if I can get to a point with his blessing that I can try to back off him again and see what happens. But, you know, I'm 42 years old. So it's like, I got a family and I got a pile of kids and a wife, and you know, I'm the sole income provider. So at the same time, I have my ego, but I also have to accept the fact that I'm not 100% bulletproof, and I've got to stay as healthy as possible for them, if nothing else. So I'm just kind of, I'm kind of riding that line. But like, as of late, ever since I kind of worked my way through that whole fiasco, the wisdom tooth, like, I'm back to feeling amazing. Like, you know, I'm taking just slightly less medication than they want me to, just to make myself feel better. But I mean, there's no adverse side effects. I just had labs done, I think like 2 weeks ago, and everything came back normal. Everything's fine. No inflammation markers, nothing.
So now, do you find that there are any, and maybe you are really strict, but have you found that there's any particular kind of foods that might hit you harder than others? If you, 100%, like, you scoop up and have like a cheat meal or whatever?
100% sugars and grains don't agree with me. And it's interesting because I had talked to my doctor about it, and it was funny because the conversation I told him, I was like, I think I know what kicked off my ulcerative colitis, like right off the bat. And I was like, I'm sure you hear that from everyone, but I'm curious, like, would you like to know what I think kicked off my ulcerative colitis? And he just started laughing. He's like, yeah, he's like, everyone swears they know. He's like, but hey, I'll listen to it because I'll never know. He's like, because, you know, it's information we got to share. So in my opinion, I probably always had really bad reaction to sugars and grains, but I was just like, it never really bothered me until I started painting cars. And when I started painting cars, adding that level of like literal toxicity to your day-to-day life, I think it's actually what pushed my immune system over the edge. Cause you know, up until 18, I really had no health issues. Then when I started painting cars, that's when all my health issues started. And then when I kind of air quote retired from painting cars and started training. So I'm not in the paint booth every day painting. And now I go in there 2-3 times a month, you know, fully geared up head to toe. But, as soon as I stopped painting cars, that's when my health kind of started turning around for the better. But alongside of that, I started taking my health more seriously and started paying a little more attention to the doctors and, you know, just making better decisions, better life choices overall. So between those two things made a huge, huge difference in my health, like 180 degrees.
So you say, yeah, I turn 42 tomorrow, but,
oh, nice.
And I've been friends with my buddy since he was 17. I don't know. I was like 20. He was 17, I think, 'cause I was in a band and he came over to where we were practicing to check it out or whatever. So he was friends with some other people in the band, and we've been friends since then. So a long time. We've been friends over 20 years. And this boy, like, his diet always consisted of potato chips, and Mountain Dew. That was his entire like diet. If we didn't go out to dinner, he always had a bag of chips in the car, always had a 12-pack of Mountain Dew in the car, because he lived like an hour away from us. Yeah. He lived even further out, like in the boonies. And so he would come out for school because he was doing like a I can't think of the word right now. It was a some kind of like where you come like from one high school to another and you learn a skill, right? I don't know why like my brain is like not coming up with the word, but he was doing like auto mechanic stuff.
Vocational.
Yeah, vocation. That's the word I'm thinking of. Thanks. some days those words just aren't there.
Yeah, it happens. But I mean, it's you know, and I'm pretty active in the UC support groups on Facebook, and you know, I do a lot of just reading of other people's stories, just you know, just for my, I don't want to say entertainment, that sounds mean, but just for like my own research purposes. And like, a diet makes a difference. You know, there's no doctors really ever talk about it, but it 100% does. And you know, my argument on that sense is like, okay, well, if you change your diet, it offers you 20% relief of your symptoms. How is that not worth experimenting with? You know, because I know what it feels like to be super sick and to have all the symptoms and it be in really bad shape. And at that moment, you're praying for 5 minutes a day to feel normal. So, like, if you can just make that, you know, make yourself feel 10, 20% better just by changing your diet, like, what do you got to lose? You can always go back to eating like crap.
Right. And I mean, and that's what I try to tell them. Like, dude, all you got to do is eat like meat. And well, I imagine alcohol probably doesn't help much. I don't know if you drink at all or but he does.
No, alcohol doesn't really help anything. Let's face it. Like in the summertime down here, I don't drink just because I got to work in collision centers and they're typically super hot and I sweat bad enough as it is. So summertime is like my dry season, but in the wintertime I drink booze and I'm like, if I get a little crazy with the booze and I, you know, drink for 4 or 5 days straight, I could definitely tell it's having an effect on my stomach. But I think, you know, for the most of the population, that's probably true.
Right. But I don't think he'll want to quit that. And then I don't think he'll want to quit eating like the cheap carby, whatever, mac and cheese or whatever he's eating, potato chips, the crackers, all the stuff that I see in his cabinets when I go to his house. And, yeah. You know, I've kind of stopped harping on him because I don't mean there's no point in it really.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, we've been friends so long, but it's always kind of like back there. I'm always worried about him, you know?
Yeah. And that's, you know, and I guarantee there's a lot of people that worry about me when I was in pretty bad shape. And it's one of those things where like, you know, I'm doing everything the doctor tells me to, like I'm eating like crap and, you know, drinking like a fish. Cause I was, you know, in my young middle 20s when most of the stuff was going down and I just wanted to be as cool as my friends were. So like I was just doing what I wanted to do and just dealing with the repercussions later. So like that obviously doesn't help, but you know, diet does make a difference, but it's like you said, like you're not going to convince someone to change if they're not willing to change.
Right. And he's one of the most stubborn people I've ever met in the first place. So
you just got to channel it, because I'm stubborn as hell too. I was able to channel it and we're good now.
Yeah. And I'll see him on Saturday and because we're going to hang out for my birthday and stuff, but yeah. So you found it like that. You found out that it helped and you found out that you've been able to at some points in this journey, get off medicine. Now you're weaning yourself back off again as well. What do you think? What else have you found that's been like a benefit besides the obvious one, the you know, the UC symptom, you know?
Oh, just like keto in general?
Right.
Oh, I mean, joint pain. My joint pain, like the use of, not, and again, I don't know if it was the reactions to grains or the ulcerated colitis, probably both, you know, everything piles on together. But like, even when I was painting cars, like, you know, I was mid 30s. And by the end of the week, I could barely get out of bed. My back would hurt so bad. My knees would hurt so bad. My knuckles would hurt so bad. And so one of the very first things I noticed when I cut the sugar and the grains out was like just the joint pain almost completely went away. So now it's like I got a running joke. Like, well, like, you know, I quit painting cars for back and knee pain that don't even exist anymore. But yeah, like now and early on in the journey when I was like 6 months in, family coming in from out of town and we just went out and I just ate whatever and just like, yeah, we're gonna go eat pizzas, we're gonna go drink beers, I'm taking them to the breweries. And like so they were in town for like 5 days, and in those 5 days I think I put like 5 or 6 pounds back on, and by day 5 my back was hurting again. My knees were hurting again. My knuckles were hurting again. And that's when I was like, oh, all right. Well, there's something to this. You know, there's something else going on here. So at that point, it was like, well, like I said, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze, you know, to keep eating like crap and just feeling like crap. Like, I prefer to try to, you know, feel as good as possible, as often as possible if I have a choice.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of like that whole, like balance that you try to find. Like, with like tomorrow being my birthday, like, you know, I was kind of looking at maybe going to like KFC and getting just the sides, like the mac and cheese and the mashed potatoes and gravy, because that's stuff that I don't have, right? So,
right, yeah,
and then, and I wanted their, but to top it off, I wanted to get some of their, like their huge home fries, like the big, fries. They don't even carry those anymore. They've got regular French fries now. I'm like, well, I don't want to do that then. So I'm like, I think we'll just make some food at home. Maybe I might order some Thai food or something, but.
Yeah. And I get, like I said, I got kids. I got young kids. My oldest is 10. And, you know, I don't restrict how they eat. And, you know, I got a 2-year-old son. And just like right before we came in here, he's walking around with his little, you know, cup of Cheerios and he's offering me a Cheerio. And I'm not going to be like, no, you know, slap it out of his hands. So, but I'm the kind of person where, like, if there's a birthday cake and I want to taste it, like, I can take a bite, enjoy that one bite, and just be like, all right, I'm cool. Like, I don't need to keep eating that. So it's like there's definitely a balance there, but I just don't, like, I don't have to, like, gorge myself on stuff in order to enjoy it. I could easily enjoy a bite and just carry on like if it was nothing. Which don't get me wrong, I understand not everyone can do that, and it's not an easy thing for a lot of people to do. It's just I'm fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, because I was just in a conversation on Twitter the last couple of days, because people were saying, I forget, I had to go back and look and see, make sure I got all the names right. But one doctor was saying that like artificial sweeteners can cause like an insulin response, and, you know, just the idea that you're going to have some food can cause that. And then all like the other people kind of pile in and say that's not true and sort of putting out case studies, this and that and the other. And I'm like, as somebody who has had, you know, food addiction problems, like, even if I go and get a Quest bar or whatever, some low sugar, whatever, keto friendly bar, whatever, like, those things, even if it's artificial sweeteners, impact me. They're still going to elicit that I'm going to have 4 of these response. Now, is it better for me to go with the Quest Hero bars versus like 4 Snicker bars? Sure. But they still elicit the same response. Like, my body's still going to want 4 of them instead of being like, well, I, you know, like you said, you can go and have like a bite of cake. I can probably do the thing with a cake because cake isn't something that really like resonates with me. But there are things that do, like ice cream really is one of those big things that resonates with me, or like brownies or whatever. And like, good thing for me, like a lot of the keto brownies and stuff like you can make, they might taste okay, but they don't have the same draw to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's easy for me to avoid. But like the real snacky, like bars and stuff, I can sit down and watch a movie and eat 4 or 5 of those if I'm not careful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, like, it's a slippery slope, man. Like, I started keto 4.5 years ago. 4.5 years ago, there was really no products on the market. You know, like, you didn't go to the grocery store, there wasn't like a keto aisle or a keto section. It was picking out the keto foods and making the stuff yourself. Now it's definitely a lot harder because, you know, there's clever marketing involved, and the line between low carb and like true keto based on ingredients has been smeared to where, you know, you got all these keto breads out here. You look at the ingredients, you're like, okay, well, you know, like in my case, I'm doing this to be as healthy as possible and to help keep a disease in remission. Like, this is not a keto product. It's a low carb product, but it's low enough carbs that they can just slap that label on it and just confuse everyone.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, they're not going to be gluten free. They're not going to be, you know, going to help the UC. They're not going to help all that stuff for people with IBS or whatever. Right. Maybe not even help people with like type 1 diabetes, or, you know, they're not going to be. And I don't think there's any one product out there that's going to be benefit, you know, that's going to be perfect for everybody. But I mean, because I think we've been doing this roughly about the same amount of time. I started in September of 2016.
Yeah.
And mine was obviously weight loss oriented, but thankfully I didn't have pain with it, but there were like, I was starting to have a lot of issues with like multiple bathroom trips every day, like 5, 6, 7. So like, even like at work, Mm-hmm. You're like off to the bathroom every 40 minutes, every half an hour. And you might be gone for 10, 15 minutes at a time. And, you know, that stuff starts to add up if you're trying to get through your work day and you were in the bathroom most of your day. And you're like, well, what's going on? Then I was too big. I had to be careful which bathroom I went into. So I had to only go in like the handicap stall because I didn't fit in the other ones. So, I mean, I don't know where I was going with that. But yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, it's, you know, we all got our reasons, and we all, like, as I say, what's your why? You know, we all got to figure out, you know, at some point, you know, everybody hits their personal rock bottom, and something's got to change. And I specifically remember the day that I hit my personal rock bottom, and, you know, I was dabbling in keto, but not. And it's just like, I'm like, all right, well, I was hungover as hell. I was trying to cook dinner. My dog gets out of the way. I got this giant slab of meat coming off the grill. And I'm like, I can't leave the meat because it's not done, but it's almost done. But the dog's taking off down the street. I've got a wicked headache. It was like that day. I'm like, something's got to change. Like, I can't, every Friday night can't be me finishing half to three quarters of a bottle of whiskey and just muddling through Saturday. Like, and that was my rock bottom. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to try this. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to stay as clean, as true as possible. See if there's anything to it. And then gauge the outcome from there. Cause this half in, half out thing, it ain't flying.
Oh, for sure. Like, cause I mean, like, you know, this thing you said about like the joints, like, even if I have like a low carb wrap, I might have two of those for dinner. And then I wake up in the morning and my knuckles are kind of sore.
Yeah, it's weird.
My knees are weird. And it's so weird how little it takes.
Yeah, and I was telling people, like, I'm like, it's not like it's pain. It's almost like my back needs to crack, but it won't. Like, my knuckles need to crack, but they won't. So it's more annoying than actual pain. Like, it doesn't hinder me from doing anything. It's just uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's like, but you notice it now. Like, and I probably had that for a long time and never noticed it. You know, there were so many things, like, that kind of pop through. And then, like, once a lot of that stuff just kind of goes away, you're like, man, I feel amazing. And then you start thinking back, like, how normal feeling bad was.
It's like I said, like death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, you know, you're slowly like beating yourself down every day internally, and then you just learn to accept it. You just learn to go with it. Like, yeah, everybody has knee pain. Everybody has this and that. Then all of a sudden, you know, you make a change like we did, and you feel better. You're like, wait a minute. Like, this is how people are supposed to feel.
Yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to be popping Tylenols and Advils every day just to, you know, be able to walk normally. Like, that's not normal.
Yeah. And then, like, and then it's a wonder that you're, you know, you're telling all your friends about it. You're telling everybody should do it because, you know, the general consensus is keto won't work for everybody. Well, I mean, I really think it would. If they put the effort into it, I don't think there's really anybody out there who is genetically designed to run better on, say, like a vegan diet, for instance.
No, I agree.
I mean, whole foods, realistically, keto is basically eating whole foods that's cut, you know, that's meat, eggs, cheese, some broccoli, cauliflower. I mean, keto really isn't the stuff. I mean, you know, I make YouTube videos where I make stuff out of all kinds of stuff. That's not necessarily keto or what keto is, but that's what kind of gets, that's kind of like the gateway keto, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things, like, it's as hard as you want to make it. Like, you know, like I always say, there's this ebb and flow where you start keto and you start off real simple because you're still trying to figure everything out, where you're just eating meat and veggies. Then you get the hang of it and you find yourself being a master chef and making all these elaborate meals and giant desserts and brownies and ice cream. And like, I've done it all. But it's like, then you get to that point and you're like, I just want to bring it back down to simple. So like, now I'm like, I've gotten past my elaborate meal thing and I'm back to eating simple, but I'll eat simple for a long time. Then also I'll be like, you know what? I feel like making ice cream. I feel like making this. I feel like making that. And then the elaborate meals will start again. But I mean, it's all available. You know, it's all out there. There's recipes for almost everything out there. You know, you make a lot of them yourself. It's just what I do enjoy about eating this way is like, say, like, I do want to make brownies. Well, how bad do I want brownies? Do I want them bad enough to make them from scratch? Because that's what it's going to take. So it's like, most of the time, I'm just like, I could use a brownie, but I don't feel like doing all that just to make them. So it looked like I made killer ice cream recipes too. And it's the same thing. Like, man, it's really good ice cream, but like, do I really feel like making ice cream from scratch? Like, do I really want it that bad? And in most cases, it's kind of like the phase I'm in now. It's like, no, not really. But, you know, 6 months from now, it might be different. You know, I might be like, making all kinds of ice cream, making all kinds of brownies, making all kinds of pancakes, just because I'm in that creative mode again and just wanting to try all kinds of new things.
Of course. Like, I'll do the same thing. Like, I'll try to basically simplify a recipe as much as I can to no frills. And I've been buying like all these silicone molds and stuff, like, to make things easier for me. So I've got like these two six count silicone molds. They're like 4-inch diameter. They make like perfect, like chaffle, almost like chaffle size, but nice. They're buns, so they're not chaffles. But and I can make breakfast sandwiches like super easy with those. So I've got 12 of them, so I'll make 4 sandwiches.
Right.
Yeah. Make the buns for those, and I can throw like one of those round, you know, one of the cheap Walmart frozen breakfast patties, you know, the sausage patties in there. Throw an egg in there, bake it all in the oven together, pull it out, put it together, slap a piece of cheese on it, and
you're good to go.
Yeah. Tastes like a McGriddle, right?
Yeah, they're good.
But I mean, and that's what I try to do. But like today, I just had a pound of like some really good beef, just some salt, cook it to where it's like nice and crunchy on the outside, but rare, really rare on the inside. And there's like, I know that a lot of things that we like to eat are good, but there's nothing better than perfectly cooked beef.
Nah, I'm with you there. I eat beef every day. You know, I think I had a steak for breakfast this morning and steak for dinner last night. Like, beef is on the daily menu. I live in Central Texas, so you know, I got a connection with local beef, and I buy it by the half steers. I got a chest freezer full of beef in the house, and I'm digging through there every single day. And, you know, if it's not ground beef, it's a sirloin or a T-bone or a ribeye, and it's just easy to do, and it's great, and it's like a one-shot meal, and you're done.
Yeah, so I go out, like, where we live, I don't really have – I mean, I can go out to a farm, but I don't know if it's more cost-effective for us to do it like that, because we're rocking 3 freezers right now.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we got one off of Facebook Marketplace, like, when we first kind of got into the keto stuff. It was like $125, and then the third one we have, we got it for free, like – my stepmom was, I don't really have room for this anymore. Do you want to take it? And if I move to a bigger place, I'll ask for it back. And I'm like, okay. And then I had it sitting in my garage for a couple of weeks, not plugged in. And then I happened to go to Kroger. You guys have Krogers down there, right? Yeah. So I went to Kroger, and I wasn't even going there for what I ended up buying. And like, they have like their Simple Truth brand. And they had, it was like 90-10 grass-fed burger and the 1 pound like rock packs, you know?
Yeah.
And they were, I don't know, I think they had to be mismarked because they were marked for $1.99 a pound.
Yeah, that's crazy cheap.
Yeah, because they're normally $8.
Yeah.
So I bought 55 pounds of it. I was like, hey, I called my wife and I'm like, hey, babe, I'm going to buy some of this beef. We're going to plug that new freezer in. She goes, what are you buying? I'm like, 55 pounds. Okay. And I'm like the only one that eats the grass-fed stuff. Nobody else in my house likes it.
That's funny. It does taste a little different. Whether it's better or not, it's definitely a matter of opinion. But I can tell the difference. It's like the stuff that I get is literally from a ranch like 60 miles up north. It's just this guy's private ranch. He doesn't sell to the public. I just happen to know a guy and kind of work my way in and making my way up his totem pole. But like, you know, he only slaughters maybe once or twice a year. And basically the deal we got worked out is I get a phone call and he's like, I'm going to slaughter. You got to be here tomorrow with cash if you want any. And I'm like, okay. So it's basically a scramble to get up there, but it's a killer deal. And you know, now that I've been dealing with this guy for a while, I'm getting a little more of a heads up and getting more of the preferred cuts. Like I got a lot of organ meats this time around that I get to play with. But so it's working out well. And I definitely enjoy it, and it's, you know, it hurts, it stings a little to give up that lump sum of money when you got to buy a half steer at a time. But like when you break it down by the pound, and you're like, okay, well, I just paid like $3 a pound for, you know, 200 pounds of meat. Like, can't really complain.
No, and have you ever bought or have so because like wild boar is such an invasive species down there for you guys. Have you bought any of those? Have you bought any wild boar? It's not really something we get normally up here, because you can buy it at like some of the specialty stores, but they want like $9 a pound for it or whatever, and it's really not that great. But I was wondering, like, I wonder if it would be worth my time looking into, because it is such an invasive species and they do go out and just kill as many as they can, if it would be like in my best interest to try to find someone down there who could slaughter me one and send me and like, and just have it shipped to me.
Yeah, I've had it. I mean, I've never had to pay for it down here. People are just always like, they'll go on a hunt and, you know, come back with way too much meat. And they're like, yeah, I'll give you a couple pounds of this, a couple pounds of that. Most of the time it's breakfast sausage. So it's like, at that point, it's got so much spices in it that you really can't tell that if it, you know, from store bought to what I got. But I've had the ribs before. I've had some of the, like the pork butts and the shoulders, and it's good. You know, it's definitely worth looking into. That's for sure.
I wonder what wild boar pork belly would taste like.
I would imagine it would taste amazing.
That's what I want. I want like a, cause like I can get pork belly from Costco, but it doesn't have the skin on it. And I could probably go and source from here somewhere around here and buy a pork belly that has the skin on it, so I can get it all crispy, like street food wise, you know. But I just, there's something about like the idea of having fresh wild, like wild boar, even wild boar sausage, maybe that's not good. Have them put much sugar in it or whatever, but just make it like breakfasty style or just regular, just ground pork.
Yeah,
I think that would be so good.
It's good. You know, I enjoy it. You know, it gets kind of hard to track, but I mean, if you're tracking your food and your calories and whatnot, then, you know, when you're getting a wild boar, it makes it a little tricky, because you just got to find a entry that's as close as you think is possible and kind of go with that. But it's not as easy as like when you pick it from the store, you're just like beep, and then it tells you exactly. Well,
I mean, to me, I try to keep my carbs as close to zero as possible. No, I wouldn't say that I'm fully carnivore, because I still like broccoli. I still like, you know, Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts, if they're cooked right, are like candy, dude. Oh, man, like, and you don't have to make them sweet, just roasted with onions and garlic. This stuff just like, you can eat it for days. And that's the weird part about this too, is I never liked vegetables before this.
It's funny. Yeah, I'm the same way.
So being able to eat that way. So like if I'm on what I consider like the straight and narrow for myself, where I'm just eating meat, eggs, not maybe a little cheese here and there. I'm not, because I've been trying to come up with recipes where I don't utilize a bunch of cheese. I don't know if like that impacts me or not. I'm always playing around with stuff. So right. I never like I don't eat the same way I do 5 years ago as I do now and all that stuff. But I want to be to where it's as no brainer, like, you know, no, as thoughtless as possible how I eat, because I don't want to track everything, because I know me. And when we first started, I was trying to put everything into MyFitnessPal. That lasted like 2 days. It was so frustrating.
It's hard. But especially when you're doing like any kind of, you know, like from scratch. Like, I don't even matter if it's paleo or keto or whatever. But like, once you got to start creating recipes for everything and trying to log everything individually, like it's really got to be worth it for you. And I completely understand. Like, I still track all my food because if I ever stop, I will never start again. Like, I know, like, I hate it every day. I hate plunging my food and counting my calories. I do it more for the performance aspect, because I know exactly where I need to be in order to stay lean and still perform at the gym and everything else I do. So it helps there, because I actually have to eat more than I want to. I'm in kind of a weird position there. But, I do track. And like I said, but if I ever stop, I'll never start again.
Yeah, as like to me, like if I would have continued on with the tracking, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at now. So that's like one of the most important things like that I try to get across to people, is you can't lie to yourself and you can't pretend to be something that you're not, because you're going to fail if you do. So like for me, understanding my own weaknesses, knowing, well, if I continue to do this and this becomes more of a priority than how I'm eating, actually, I'm going to fail.
Right.
I'm going to stop. I'm going to give up. And then I'm going to be back where I was. So I understand that, you know, and I totally get that tracking is so important. But even for people, like when people come to me and they want weight loss, I'll be like, look, if you're going to start this, if you have issues like with food, like I did, like you got to not be hungry when you're starting out. You got to like basically and people probably will disagree with me on this, but I'm like, if you are someone who's coming into this because of weight and you have food addiction problems and you want to make this stick and you want to stay away from eating the garbage that you were eating before, then trying to eat like 2,000 calories in a day or trying to watch your calories or even really at the beginning caring about calories at all is going to be more inhibitive to you than just eating when you're hungry and just making sure you're putting in your face the best options you can. So if you're eating like 20 hamburger patties and 16, you know, boiled eggs in the day, but you got through the day and didn't eat a Snickers bar, who cares if that was however many thousand calories or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of like where we are with, cause I don't really see that too much in our Facebook group, but I don't see a lot of people like kind of dogging on each other over calories and stuff, but
no, I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, is it the calories matter is obviously a whole conversation and a thing, and they matter to a certain extent, but I don't think they matter as much as people are led to believe, you know. And my whole thing there is like, you know, like when I was purposely bulking, like trying to gain weight, like weightlifting and eating clean keto, but a lot of it, I tried to do a bulk and I didn't track. I just ate, and 6 months later, I gained 0 pounds. Next year, I tried it again, and I tracked meticulously, and I ate till I was full, then kept right on eating till I was finished, and in 6 months, I gained 12 pounds. So it's like, I can't argue that calories don't matter, because when I didn't track and tried, my quote-unquote bulk was unsuccessful, but when I did track and ate to a number, then I was actually successful at gaining weight. So like there's something to it. And then like now coming up here in a little bit, I usually do a cut once a year just to like kind of like starve myself out for a while and lean out a little bit and it just for the summertime. And like last year I did it, and I actually really, looking back, I enjoyed it. I mean, I got super lean, dropped a bunch of body fat. I looked great, felt terrible, but like there was almost something like therapeutic to like that long, slow starvation. To where you just kind of like almost like reset everything and made me really appreciate when the calories started coming back up and I was able to eat more. You know, it was like it's almost like I reset my actual hunger signals, because like when I was doing that real aggressive bulk, like I completely ruined my hunger signals. So that was a whole experience in itself. And I don't think I'll ever try to bulk like that again. I mean, it was obnoxious. I was eating almost 4,000 calories and 300 grams of fat a day, like every single day for 6 months. And when you're eating that much food, like, yeah, like it sounds like, oh, I could eat 4,000 calories a day. Well, could you do it for 6 months straight every single day? That's a different monster. And I got to the point where it's like I would sit down for dinner and I wasn't even hungry, but I just keep eating because it was on the plate. And that's what I had tracked and that's what I had to eat. And I'm like, man, I'm so full. And I just keep shoveling food in my mouth because I wasn't done yet. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a minute. Like, this can't be healthy. You know, like this is not a good way to approach these things. So I kind of weaned off that, then went into a cut, starved myself out to where I was hungry like all day, but I did it to myself on purpose. And then, you know, then as the calories came back up, I found a real nice happy medium, and that's kind of where I'm at now. So now, ironically, I'm back up to the calories I started my cut at last year, but I'm a lot leaner than I was. So I'm super curious. Because they say, even if you talk to any bodybuilder, that every time you go through a cut and gain cycle, that your body kind of remembers and you have a better response every time you do it. So this year, like I'm happy with the way I look now, but I'm really curious if I'm going to have a better response than last year and actually be able to get a little bit leaner and suffer a little bit less, since it's like I'm a little more mentally prepared as to what I'm putting myself through.
So now when you did your bulk, you were doing it as like a clean keto. So you weren't using any like protein powders or anything like that, right?
No. I was 100% high fat, clean keto by ingredients. If I remember correctly, it was 3,700 calories, 310 grams of fat, like I think 175 grams of protein. And I mean, carbs, when you're eating that much food and you're eating just for calories, carbs, you get a little bit of carb creep, but I don't think my carbs ever got above like 40 grams total. But I mean, it was a chore. You know, you're looking at eating 1,000 calories per meal, then you got to add 700 calories after that.
Well, I think one of the most difficult things about trying to bulk up eating that way is you're not getting that desired insulin response, though, that insulin overproduction, I think. Right. Because I think that's one of the things, like when you're drinking like the whey protein shakes and you're drinking all those bodybuilder shakes, I think those will. And I think I remember Richard Morris on the keto, the Two Keto Dudes podcast years and years ago. He tried something where he was doing like a egg protein isolate versus just eating regular eggs. Mm-hmm. And then he was tracking like his numbers when he would eat those. And he was seeing, you know, like a little blip when he ate the regular eggs, but then, and then would go kind of go bloop and then back down again, like a normal, like, cause you put food in your body. Now your body's like, okay, we've got this here. I'm going to take care of it, but it's normal. This is no big deal. But then he was doing the egg protein isolate, and I could be totally messing this up, but this is from memory. But he would say he would get a longer spot, like a little bit bigger of a spike, and it would last a lot longer. So I wonder if, like, so that kind of makes me wonder, like, about the whole calorie thing. Like, because if you're eating, say, if you were eating 3,600 or 3,700 calories and your macros were set and you're doing that clean versus getting that in, like, as a powder, as a shake, and you're drinking, like, three shakes a day, and then you're having your steak or your chicken or whatever your actual meal is going to be for the day. So you're basically, the numbers are the exact same, but the input's different. I wonder if the way the body would process those artificially procured like macronutrients in the shakes and how that would have an impact on the insulin response, because we know that insulin is necessary to grow muscle.
Right.
Because a lot of those pro jack bodybuilders will actually shoot insulin.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So like I had
a buddy of mine who was a bodybuilder too, and he was like, his post-workout shake had an absurd amount of sugar in it for that exact reason. You know, that was, and that's, you know, bordering on bro science, but that he's like, yeah, I picked this one because it's got the most sugar, and it's for after workout to, you know, skyrocket your sugar and your insulin. And I'm like, rock on, buddy. One thing I will say is, like, when I did it, like I said, I ate that way for 6 months. I gained 12 pounds. I went from about I don't remember how much I gained. I got up to 190. Like, I walk around right now at about 175 pounds. When I'm really lean, I get just below 170. And when I finished that cut, or when I finished that bulk, rather, I was up to almost 190 pounds. And I will say that, like, I got big, and I obviously you do take on a little bit of fluff, but I didn't get fat. Like, I still had a resemblance of abs, and I was just carrying around. Like, I loved the way I looked. I just had this mass about me, but in order to maintain that and to eat that much food was like the definition of unsustainable. Like, it was just like, there's no way I could just keep trying to eat like that. You know, it was a rough 6 months, but yeah, it was interesting in the sense that even in other groups, just fitness groups in general, where I was posting my progress or what I was doing, the amount of people that were blown away, like, dude, you ate 300 grams of fat a day and you still have abs and you gained 12 pounds. And I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I didn't have a cut up six pack or nothing, but the fact that I was able to do that and retain something that resembled ab muscles was actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I don't think, coming back to me being realistic with myself, I don't think I'm ever going to be the person with abs. Now, it could very well happen. Let's be real. I don't really know what, you know, being 40, I'll be 42 tomorrow, but, I don't see that, you know, that's going to be something. I don't think that's going to be me. I'm not going to look like Goody Beats, right?
Right. Well, either not, for that matter.
I mean, because that takes a whole other level of motivation. Not just motivation, but it takes a time commitment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's face it. That's pretty much his job.
Right.
You know, I have a full-time job. I'm not a full-time athlete. So there's a difference there.
Right. And I mean, and I'm trying to get to my, you know, I'm in the situation now where, you know, I have time to do things like this. I have time to do my YouTube videos. I'm taking over and have been watching my granddaughter like three to four days a week, because that saves my stepdaughter like so much money a month.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Childcare. And then that way we know she's getting the care that she needs. You know what I mean? She's hanging out with Paul every day and we're watching Disney. And you know, I'm not like the normal grandpa, and I've said it on other podcasts, but I don't feed her candy. We eat eggs and we have, you know, meat. She likes hot dogs. So whenever, but she doesn't like to eat very much. She's a kid, so she doesn't want to eat for very long.
Right. Yeah, my kids rarely ever eat, but when they decide to eat, man, do those kids put it down.
Yeah. So I try to, like, you know, mommy and daddy will bring her over with like bug juice and I'll put it in the trash.
Right.
I mean, and I know that seems kind of weird, but I mean, and I know I talk to all kinds of parents, and some, you know, will be more, you know, more lenient with, you know, with like how they have their kids eat, and they'll eat like the keto. So when we started keto, my kids were older, so our kids, I'm the stepdad of three kids. And when we started the keto lifestyle, like the youngest was 12 and he was not thrilled, but the whole house went keto because it was the two boys. Our daughter had kind of started migrating out of the house and was like starting to do her own thing. And so she didn't necessarily, you know, go that path, but our boys were in rugby and they were active and we were eating keto and they like slimmed down and they were able to keep up at practice and run however many miles a day they needed to run. It made a transition for me so much easier because I was able to go through with my wife and basically give away or throw away everything in our house that didn't help us. Now, I know that's not possible for most. And so for that, I'm extremely, I don't think if it would have been for that, I would be successful, but so thankful for that. But that's why now, like, I'm still weird about giving her too much stuff. Like, I don't want her to have too much sugar. And for, and like her first birthday, we got her a cake. You get the cake and you want them to play in it. She kind of like licked her finger on it and was like, oh, there's stuff over here. I'm going to go play on this splash pad. So I was, you know, she didn't care about the cake, but they were like the other kids that were there for the party were kind of scooting ever closer to the cake. They're like, I want that. She was like, all right, you guys have it. I'll be over here.
Yeah. And it's interesting with kids too, because like I said, my daughter's Noah's two. So he's, you know, he doesn't quite count in this for the story, but my other daughters are 7 and 10. And obviously they're aware of how I eat and they know I eat keto. And so just their awareness, like I said, I don't stop them from eating anything they want. They're young, they're healthy, they got great metabolisms, you know, they don't have any, you know, metabolic issues. But they're aware, like they'll come to me and they'll have something like, does this have sugar in it? And so like the awareness is there. And then there's times where I walk in the kitchen and they're sitting in the pantry reading nutrition labels to each other and how many calories and how big is a serving, and you know, and it's not like they're trying to figure out what's healthy or what's not, but the fact that they're just that the awareness is there. And you know, they'll be able to use that in the future to make any kind of decisions they want. Like, they'll know how to read a nutrition label. They know how to read ingredients. They're like, oh, well, this has X amount of grams of sugar in it. Maybe we shouldn't have that, you know. So they have whatever snacks they want, but there's definitely an awareness of what they're eating and how much of it they should eat. And I would say compared to most kids, they actually probably eat really, really clean. It's because we don't, you know, the kids do what the parents do, and me and my wife eat really, really clean. So, like, yeah, do they still have their sugar snacks and, you know, their graham crackers or whatever? Like, absolutely, but they don't eat a whole lot of candy, and they've never had soda. They just don't like it. They've tried it. They don't like it at all. About as dirty as they get is, like, apple juice or orange juice or something like that. But that's just how their palates have developed, you know. It's kind of interesting.
That's totally impressive, too, because I know when, you know, I was in my 30s, I was like 37. I don't know how old I was, like whatever 5 years ago was math. But, you know, we didn't understand what we were getting into. Like, you know, we went to the store and we spent hours combing over all the different products. Like, you know, well, they say quinoa is good for us. So how many carbs is in quinoa? Wait, what? 36 grams per a serving? This is crazy. It's like we went into it not knowing anything, like how much sugar is really in stuff. Well, how much carbs are really in stuff. And I think that's a big thing. Like, yes, they put those labels on everything, but nobody actually pays any attention to it.
No.
And most people, if they do, they're just looking at the fat count. How much fat
is there? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Once you start reading labels and sugar content and carb content, you just like, it's kind of like this whole other world opens it up, and you say it's baffling. It's mind blowing. And in some cases, it's infuriating. Like, this is supposed to be quote unquote healthy. I've been eating this for years. And like, now I'm reading, like, I don't even know what half these ingredients are. But because it's marketed as healthy, I've been eating it. Like, you know, everyone does it. Everyone did it. A lot of people still do it. It's just the way that we were all brought up, and you know, we're fed on television and advertising and marketing. And it's like, you know, I don't blame anyone, but it's like once they actually start reading nutrition labels and kind of realizing what's in them, you're just like wow, like it's pretty crazy.
I mean, there's definite blame there, and I kind of blame us for not questioning it more. But I mean, I was the Snackwell generation, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, zero fat. So, oh, we can eat the whole box. Awesome.
Yes.
You know? And I don't know. And I kind of wonder, like, how long it's going to take for whether it's keto or whatever, whatever they decide to package it as, mm-hmm. for there to be the total paradigm shift for at least the United States. I'm sure other countries are probably kind of headed out before us. Maybe, but it seems like there's so much resistance right now. Like, there's always like snide little articles about how it's bad for you and, you know, it's not sustainable. And so when we first started, my wife being an RN, she was at work and she was talking with one of the dietitians, and she says, oh, I've heard about that. I've just heard it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable.
Well, I mean, sustainable is relative, you know, like, yes. I go to the gym a lot, like, they're like, lift heavy. What does that mean? Heavy for who? Like, what's heavy for me might not be heavy for you. What's, you know, and vice versa. You know, heavy is relative. Sustainable is relative. Like, to me, and to you as well, and obviously most people that have been sticking with keto for a while, like this is the easiest way I've ever. It's almost brainless. Like, all right, like, I got this pile of veggies, I got butter, and I got this slab of meat. That's pretty, it's pretty sustainable and easy to me.
I mean, like, the hardest part for me, which is kind of a fun thing for me to do, is shopping on a budget. So knowing which store to go to get the best deal on eggs or whatever, right? So, you know, I'm always looking for how can I get the most bang for my buck, because eating this way is not necessarily it's not as expensive as people think it is, if you're not including like all the keto branded products.
You're 100% right. Yeah.
So now that's kind of a nature of kind of my, like, you know, I have that YouTube channel. So, I mean, or this YouTube channel or whatever, but we go and we buy things. Like, I've got some products downstairs to test on video this week, because they're labeled keto. So I figured we'll taste it, and we usually don't like it.
It ain't great. Let's face it. You know, most of the time it ain't great.
No, and I mean, we're probably not going to get any endorsements by anybody, but I mean, there's a couple companies that we really do like, but they're cost prohibitive.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at like Rebel Ice Cream, 100% legit product. It's amazing as far as ice cream goes, but it's also $5-6 a pint.
Right.
So it's like, be like, yeah, like, do I have Rebel Ice Cream in the freezer? I do. And do we buy it on occasion? Yes, I buy it on occasion. But what stops me from buying more of it is it's $5-6 a pint.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and we'll buy, like, the Halo Top keto stuff, because, like, at Walmart, it's, like, less than $4 a pint. Now, it's not as clean as Rebel, but sometimes we'll buy those. Now, I do like the Rebel ice cream sandwiches, and we did a review on those, and those were surprising because I thought the cookie was good, and, yeah. And there's a new brand. It has, like, a whale logo. I can't – Killer Cream.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because I know Goody had his own like limited edition run flavor with them for a little while, but it was like some ridiculous number to order some. So I was like, I couldn't even justify it. I wasn't doing a channel at the time. And now they're doing ice cream sandwiches. And they look like the old school ice cream sandwiches. But then when you go and do a search, they're nowhere near us yet. I don't know if they're in your stores yet or not. I know some friends of mine out in Las Vegas have found them. So they're out and about, they're coming, I guess. But so there's more and more of those products coming out. But like I said, like even something like, I don't know and you probably wouldn't try it because it's got the wheat and all that stuff in it. But like the Wonder Works keto friendly cereal that you can buy at Walmart.
I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah, they've got three flavors. They have cinnamon, chocolate, and peanut butter. I've got two boxes of peanut butter in my cabinet unopened because they taste like cereal. And I like it. But then it makes my joints hurt. It's like I have it up there and it's $7 a box. So I don't want to throw it out. And I'm probably going to have some tonight as I've been thinking about it. I'm like, and my birthday's tomorrow.
There you go.
You know, I mean, and I have stuff like that in the house. And I have like some of those, like the Walmart brand Equate. They have like these look like peanut butter cup fat bombs.
Yeah.
Man, but those don't make my joints hurt no so much, but they like make me like painfully gassy. It's like the weird side effects that come with this stuff. Like, I don't know what's worse, like having like joint pain or like not being able to not fart.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice to have to choose, but
it's so weird. And now my wife, she likes the Russell Stover's little chocolate toffees, right. Like chocolate covered toffees. And I'm not going to get into the side effects that she's willing to put up with, but I'm not willing to put up with those.
Right.
Because those last all night. And I'm like, no. And I'm sure they're delicious. I think I probably had one. One probably isn't going to do it to you. Right. But they come in these little bags. And that little bag is like a fat guy serving. You know what I mean? I mean, being realistic here, you know? So, and they're one of the most affordable candies you can buy. Like, they've got, when you go to the grocery, they've got that ubiquitous like sugar-free candy section.
Right.
And all of those things are going to cause you great digestive distress. And it's cheap compared to Lily's or, you know, whatever, you know, Quest or whatever, right? So I'm always wondering about that. Like, why? I mean, it's so weird that we're willing to do that to ourselves sometimes. Yeah. You know, and more often than not, I mean, you know, like you know, you're a pretty strict guy with your diet, and rightfully so. And I try to be pretty strict with myself because it's not because I'm trying to be like self-righteous or whatever, but I feel better when I'm strict. But then I know that there's this yummy stuff out there that I can eat and I'm only gonna mildly feel like crap.
Go ahead.
And it may not break me or whatever, but
right. Yeah, I mean, it's like if you can moderate it, you know, there's no harm in it. Are you able to moderate it to the point where you can have enough, find that fine line where you're satisfied with what you eat, but you avoid the vast majority of those bad side effects?
I mean, it's like you buy one box because you know that one box is probably going to be your serving. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully then you don't, and then it's like $8 a box. So you don't go buy it right away, but you know. And I know that we're going on vacation in July. We're going down to Gulf Shores. And there's like, and we've been down there a couple times now. And there's like a pizza place that we like that's not keto. I mean, luckily for me, like in town here, like just 10 minutes up the road, there's a keto pizza place.
Oh, nice.
Like their keto offerings, they have like keto pizza, they have keto breadsticks, keto sandwiches, keto soups. They have a big salad bar, which you can obviously make keto. And then they have like keto desserts. They have like shortbread cookies and cupcakes, and they sell like Bang energy drinks too. And they have this whole like keto thing going on. And it, I mean, realistically, that saved their business.
That's crazy. I mean, it's good, you know.
And they're like,
yeah, that's.
They're the only place I've heard of. I mean, now I think certain places start to have like cauliflower crust and whatnot, but they're rocking like the fathead dough.
They're making it from scratch. Yeah, there's this place that opened down. I think it's called the Keto Kitchen, and I haven't been there yet, but and I haven't looked into it far enough to see if it's truly keto or if it's just low carb. But like this whole place, like it's called the Keto Kitchen. The entire restaurant, their entire menu, everything that they offer is. Well, let's just say it's at least low carb. I don't know if it's keto because I haven't looked into it enough. I'm like, I definitely want to go check that place out just because you're like, I'd like to walk into a restaurant and be like, I want that and that and that, and then not have to worry about it. You know?
Well, that's like what I've wanted, like, because I know I've had some friends because of the pandemic open up pizza places. And because pizza is easy, you can, it's easy to deal with in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. When we're dealing with everything being shut down, and then they don't have to have dine-in. You can just come and pick up your pizza or whatever. But they don't have any keto offerings. And I've kind of like reached out to both of them like, hey, if you want to get a keto thing going on, I'll help you out. Because, I mean, that could change the business. Absolutely. Because there aren't a lot of places that serve a keto, like, an actual keto menu, and going in and understanding that they've put thought into the recipe and they're not just saying, oh, this is keto. That's like the difference for me between going to like BW3s or Buffalo Wild Wings or like Winging It or what are Wings, etc., or what are the other places are.
Right, because
I know that Buffalo Wild Wings is going to cook their wings and beef tallow, and I don't know, probably some kind of seed oil in the other places. Now, if I only go once a month or once every few weeks or once every few months, it's probably not going to be that big of a deal. But if I know this place is giving me exactly what I want, I'm going to give them my money. Yeah. And it makes for a good date night. You know, we can get out, go get some wings on a Tuesday. They're cheaper, you know?
Yeah, it's convenience, you know? Convenience goes a long way.
Well, I mean, because there's a few things that I don't like to cook. Like, I don't like to make fathead dough. It takes too long. It's kind of a pain in the ass. And then, like, cooking wings is kind of a pain in my butt too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably not if I did it more. But buying them, it's almost cheaper to go eat them at B-Dubs than just buy them and cook them.
Yeah. Well, I do wings. Like, we typically do wings every Sunday, and it's like from the moment I start to the moment they're done, because I smoke them and then I put them in the oven. It's a 2-hour ordeal. You know, mind you, I don't got to sit there and babysit them for 2 hours, but it's a 2-hour ordeal from the minute. Like, if we're gonna eat dinner at 5, I got to start making wings like at 2:45 so that if they're out of the oven by 4:45. So that we can eat dinner by 5. I gotta like make sure I carve out a chunk of day to make sure that happens, and I'm like, all this for like chicken wings.
So at home we eat chicken thighs, which are basically just oversized chicken wings.
Yeah,
because I mean they've got all that good, and I cook them. I cook them Butter Bob style. I don't know if you're familiar with Butter Bob or not. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
So I mean, since I found him, I've cooked the wings just like he does, or the chicken thighs just like he does, probably once a week, once every 2 weeks since I've found him and found what he was doing. Man, that dude changed my like chicken life, because I didn't really know how to cook chicken before that. It's weird how that kind of stuff can come around and you can learn how to cook, and because before being keto, like, my wife did most of the cooking.
Right.
And then what I would cook, I started as our relationship got stronger, and, you know, and we built our relationship and everything, and I would start to cook more and more. And I would go and buy like frozen meals, like get the stuff that had like the frozen rice in it and the chicken. And then it already has like the peppers and onions in it. And like you'd make fajitas. It would just be like one pan, just pour it in, put like the little sauce packet in, and be good to go.
Right.
But now I cook everything from scratch. I mean, I cook a lot of frozen vegetables because they keep longer.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's still, I mean, I pull out the frozen vegetables. I'm making whatever I'm making. You know, I don't have any like, you know, I don't have any like real frozen meals except for maybe meat that's already frozen or whatever. But
yeah.
So, I mean, every night I'm cooking food. Like last night I took some of that sweet Italian sausage from Costco and cut it into little small pieces, and I fried it up with some canned chicken because it was just easy, and then like a bag of peppers and onions that were frozen, and then, you know, like the salt, pepper, garlic, and all that stuff. And I added a bunch of like cheese into it, and then I had made some like these keto like almond. They're like almond flour with Parmesan cheese and egg. And then they were like these little discs, like little, basically like little cheesy garlic bread discs. Right. I've made them in my little 4-inch molds or whatever, because it makes everything so easy.
Right.
And then I made that, and then so, and I kind of put a feeler out there on social media if people wanted to see that kind of recipe or whatever. Because it literally took like 10 minutes because I'd already made like the garlic bread the other day for a video, and I had them in a Ziploc. All I had to do is put them in the oven on the broil for like five, not even like what, 2-3 minutes, and they were ready to go. The other stuff like was one pan, took like 10 minutes. So, you know, and I know a lot of people aren't that willing to learn a whole new style of cooking. So,
yeah.
So that's like, I want to talk to people like you and talk about stories and how you've helped yourself with like UC. And then I want to like showcase like the videos and show that it doesn't take all that long or isn't really that difficult to eat this way and be creative and not just eat like a hamburger patty every day.
Yeah. So I'm guilty of doing that too when I'm lazy. You know, I get home from work and it's hot, I'm tired. I'm like, it's frozen burger patty day. Like, shamelessly, I don't care.
I could totally. There was a time my brother got me like this little weird indoor, like, I don't know, it was kind of like a modified like Foreman grill, but it was flat. And you're just like, basically, it was like a panini press, but I cooked right. Burger on it. And I would take my bulk burger, cut it into strips. So they'd be like strips about like this big. And I would just lay them on there and cook them on that thing and just pop them out. That thing didn't last very long. It just fell apart.
Oh, yeah. Well, we beat on kitchen appliances. That is for sure.
Yeah.
You know, when you start like, you know, you got to make sure you get a good food processor because you are going to beat that thing up.
We had a Ninja and it just died on us. And then I just haven't, it's like, I can't, like, it's hard to justify going spending another like $200 on a food processor.
Yeah.
So like, I was like doing the math the other day. I ran across some of those pork rind crumbs by Pork. Mm-hmm. Like the brand PORQ, and they were like $5 or $6 at Walmart versus some of the other ones that I've seen at other stores, the other brands. They're like $10 for like a pound of pork rind crumbs. And I was doing like the math in my head. I'm like, if like 5 ounces of pork rinds is like $3, $2, and then I don't have to crush it myself, I'm in.
Right. Yeah.
So I think just that's how you make it sustainable, but you got to be inventive. You got to be willing to learn. And I know that all of these keto branded items that are coming out are crutches, I would say, for people. They're like gateway keto. They're crutches. I mean, even for me, I'll buy them sometimes. Like Costco finally came out with their keto brand hot dog buns.
Oh, wow.
And they're amazing. You put their hot dogs on them and they're delicious. But, you know, can't keep them in the house all the time because then I'll eat hot dog buns every day. So, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we figure it out. You know what I mean? Like you just got to find your way of approaching it and making sure it's worth it, worth your time. And so you can get as complicated as, you know, like I once made a avocado ice cream, which tastes exactly what you think it tastes like. It's like, it wasn't bad, but it was like, you weren't craving it. You know, I made avocado ice cream from scratch, and then I made avocado brownies from scratch, and I made myself this big, giant ice cream sandwich out of it. And altogether, it was an amazing ice cream sandwich. It took a lot of work, a lot of effort, but that's what I wanted to do that day. And it was like, you know what, like I'm going to treat myself this big giant avocado treat and enjoy this thing. And it was good. I enjoyed it. But like I said, if I wanted to eat an ice cream sandwich every day and I had to make those two recipes to make it happen, like that wouldn't happen. Like there's no way. Like it's just too much time.
Yeah. There's a lot of that stuff I've never done. I've never done like the avocado ice cream or avocado. Well, one, because avocados, at least for us, they're expensive.
Yeah. They're most definitely expensive.
So, I mean, like a lot of times, like up here, they're like $1 a piece. I'm like, I can just buy some whatever. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's like the cost prohibitive part, I think. But being smart about it, like if you use Flip and you kind of look at all the stores in your area and who's got steak or burger or whatever on sale, and you're utilizing your freezer space or like you and you're going and you're getting I imagine you're getting a pretty good deal on a half steer.
Yeah.
Or if you're able to get free boar meat. Oh, sounds amazing.
It's weird. Like, my wife's just like, this doesn't happen to normal people. Like, yeah, I went to a shop and the shop owner's like, hey, he's like, you eat a lot of meat, right? And I'm like, yeah. It's kind of a weird question to ask someone, but sure. He's like, oh, I went hunting last weekend. And I got this venison in the freezer that I'm not going to eat. And I ended up going home with like 2 pounds of venison. And then I went to go visit my buddy at a brewery like a week later. He owns a brewery, a hell of a brewmaster, and he makes like the best zero carb gluten free seltzers, where like he's actually distilling the booze himself. Ooh. And then turning it into a seltzer.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, no, his stuff's amazing. And I went over by him, and he's just like, hey, he's like, yeah, I saw you cooking, you know, whatever. He's like, I got something for you. And he's like, hey, he takes me to the back room, opens the freezer, hands me this big giant 12-pound pack of like dinosaur beef ribs. He's like, just see what you can do with these. I want to see what you can pull off of this. I'm like, okay. So I'm coming home with this big bag of beef ribs. My wife's like, telling me, like, this doesn't happen to normal people. People just offer you meat. And I'm like, whatever, I'll take it because I'm gonna eat it.
Yeah, I don't really have that too often. Like, oh, it'd be nice. But I mean, we don't really have like, we're kind of in like a meat desert. Like, there's not a lot of, I mean, if we were to go out in the country, I guess there's some farms out there, but I don't know, like, I don't have any relationships with any of those, or like the ones that are like on, like you go online and tell them what you're looking for. Then when they're ready, then you come and pick it up or whatever.
Yeah.
But that is kind of, that even in itself seems cost prohibitive, because then you're dropping down like $1,000 for half a cow or whatever.
Yeah. Obviously, your best bet if you're doing something like that is see if you can find a local farmer's market. Because every farmer's market, we used to go to a lot of farmer's markets when we do when they're in season, obviously. And almost every farmer's market we went to, there's some guy there with a pile of coolers and selling, you know, beef from his ranch or his farm or whatever. And I mean, it ain't, that's not the best way to, the most cost-effective way to get it when you're there at the farmer's market. But if you start talking to that guy and building up a relationship with that guy, then chances are you'll end up being able to squeeze a better deal out of it if you plan on buying like a bulk amount.
Yeah, I mean, for us too, like, it doesn't, like, we don't need a lot of roasts. We don't need a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, we would want the burger. We'd want like the strips. I don't even really want the porterhouses or the T-bones. Those really don't interest me much. Like, especially if I'm paying by the pound, like, I don't want to go and buy a bunch of T-bones because I'm paying for that pound. Like, you know, when you see like those giant tomahawks, you're like, and I look, and I just see dollar signs stacked on that long rib. You know, I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, it's $15 a pound. And I'm like, man, that piece of bone right there is $6.
Exactly. I mean, they look cool. Don't get me wrong. I've never cooked one. They look amazing. I'm sure I would enjoy it. But the same thing, like you just said, I'm not paying for that bone. It just ain't happening.
Yeah, and that's how I feel about like ribeye or like bone-in ribeyes, unless there's a good deal on it. Because like Kroger will have good deals on their bone-in ribeyes sometimes. It usually goes in cycles, but and we'll buy those in bulk and then we'll freeze them and then I don't know. I hopefully get to the point where it doesn't really matter. I'd like to be, you know, like self like funded or whatever, where like it doesn't really matter how much I'm spending on meat.
Right. But yeah.
I'm not there, so I'm on a hamburger budget trying to buy steak,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't get me wrong, in order for me to buy these half steer, like I still do a ton of side work. You know, I do a ton of side work. So my meat and training budget does not come out of the family budget. Like I still do side work. I'll save that money on the side. And like, that's the money I use that I spend when I go to the gym or when I go training. And that's the money I use when these half steers come up. So it's like, I can't have that big chunk of cash come out of the family budget. So I get where that comes from, and you know, things have got to be done. I got to make adjustments, but it's like, to me, it's like, it's still worth it in the end, you know? And I've been painting cars forever. I'm really well known for it. So it's like, it doesn't take a lot of side work for me to make a decent amount of money doing a side job. So it's easily worth my time. And I'm at the point now where I could pretty much call out my price and either you're going to pay it or you can go somewhere else. Cause I'm just not going to be interested in doing it, you know? So you can juggle things. It can be possible. You just got to prioritize and make sure all the other needs are taken care of for the family first.
So what are some of the coolest cars you've painted?
Oh, man, I've painted almost everything. Like, I had a lot of hot rods, a lot of vintage cars, Lamborghinis, Porsches, you know, all that stuff. But, like, the more of the cooler stuff is, like, for me, it's the oddball stuff. Like, if you get, like, a vintage car that no one's ever seen before, you know, and that there's only, like, you know, a handful of them left in the world because there's nobody had any interest in them. You know, like, like some of the older stuff, some of the more peculiar stuff, like the old like De Tomaso Panteras. Like there's only a handful of those left in the world. Or if you, someone comes across just like a really clean like 55 Chevy or you know Chevelle or something like that, just this nice iconic muscle car. Like I enjoy painting that stuff like a lot more. But like I come from the collision background, where like most of my painting and even my job now is insurance work. You crash your car, you take it to a body shop, it gets fixed. You know, I work for the company that sells the body shop, the all the sandpaper and masking tape and paint and everything. And I strictly deal with the paint. So like most of my experience is just collision work. But I do like do restoration work and custom paint work, and I work with a local custom airbrush artist and do a lot of the work for him. So I'm always getting some really interesting stuff. You know, whether it's motorcycle part, like, or just today I was, I put some primer on some electric guitars. So we're going to sand them down. He's going to do full blown airbrush artwork on these electric guitars, and I'll take them back and I'll clear coat them, you know, make them all nice and shiny, protect all of his artwork, take them back to him, and then we'll cut them down and buff them and then assemble the electric guitars. And somebody's going to have really, really cool, fully assembled electric guitars.
That's what I'm into. Like, so I did collision claims. Like I did work like total loss claims. So I didn't really, for a long time, didn't do sending anybody to get anything fixed because they were coming to me. They were basically not being fixed. But in the beginning I did like the new losses and stuff. And I would talk to people and I would set up their appointments for them to go see, you know, whatever body shop they were going to. And so I did that for a long time. So I'm familiar with that kind of stuff, but guitars are really awesome, especially custom painted guitars.
Yeah, I like doing the oddball stuff, you know, doing electric guitars, stuff like that. That stuff, motorcycles, you know, motorcycles are always fun because they're small. You know, you don't compared to a car. There's a lot of work going into painting a car. When you paint a motorcycle, like inch for inch, motorcycle is the way to go because you can. It's interesting because you can tell someone like just throwing out round numbers here. Because like it's, someone asks you to paint their car, you tell them $5,000. They look at you like you're crazy. Someone comes to you with a motorcycle that's smaller than a car, and you tell them $5,000 to paint a motorcycle, and they'll sit there and think about it like, okay, yeah, I can almost justify that. So it's because like the motorcycle is a luxury. You know, a car is a necessity. People don't see their daily drivers as a luxury for the most part. So it's interesting, and I get a kick out of all of it. You know, I got a lot of friends in the industry and met all the top end custom painters and well known painters and the guys that have had TV shows. I've been on TV. I've been in magazines. And it's an interesting industry. That's for sure.
That's awesome. So I'm going to pick your brain a little bit. So I'm looking to getting a Cybertruck whenever they come out. So like that's still going to be like 3 to 4 years away, right?
Yeah, they're building them right down the street here.
Yeah, I made a trip special down there to go drive by that factory. Now, I had friends that lived in Austin, but I had – because I'm an investor in Tesla too. So I was like,
oh, nice.
I need to see this factory up close. But I mean, all I did was drive up the highway, and my friend was filming in the thing, right? So it was still like a minute. You're driving by that factory for like a minute.
Yeah, it's
so huge. But I'm looking to buy one of those Cybertrucks, and I'm not going to want to keep it silver. Right. It's going to be, you know, just that stainless steel silver. And I figure that paint probably isn't going to be the best option because I don't think you want to paint stainless steel. So I figured wrapping would probably be the best option.
Right.
But I don't know for sure. I figured I would just
They're about the same price. I mean, to wrap a car and to paint a car is right around the same price, assuming you're not going for 100% show quality, which I mean, most people aren't. But the difference between a wrap and a paint job, once you put the paint job on that paint job's on that car. If you put a wrap on the car, at some point you can take the wrap off and whatever's underneath it is still perfectly preserved.
Right.
So that's a good argument for wraps, in my opinion.
And that's what I'm looking for because I figure like a truck, like a Cybertruck, is going to last a really long time because it's not going to rust out. Right. You know, the batteries that they're going to be putting in them are going to be like a million mile battery plus. So you're going to get a million miles out of it. So if the car doesn't fall apart and the technology doesn't quickly get too antiquated, then you've got a really long, you're getting at least 10, 15 years out of a truck.
Yeah.
And I figure putting like, even if I'm putting like, if I'm spending what is going to be like $90,000 for this truck, I figure a $5,000 wrap on it or whatever, right? It's probably not going to be that. It's not going to be that out of the realm of possibility for spending like $5,000-$6,000 on a wrap. or whatever it costs. I don't really know. I've never looked into it yet. And I imagine I'll get a good crash course when I go to do it, but
Yeah, I mean, a wrap's going to be a faster turnaround time. There's like not a there's not nearly as much as disassembly involved. Because like when you paint a car, yeah, everything's got to come apart. Then there's the prep work, and so the wrap is definitely the more efficient way to go.
And I figure too, then if I ever get to ever decide that, you know, and protect. I mean, not really. You need to protect like stainless steel or whatever, but then it looks, because I kind of like flat black would be more my flavor than like a real shiny steel.
Yeah,
but. I think that truck would look awesome, flat black.
I agree. I
think but, so I figured then, like, if I decided down the line, oh, I'm tired of this flat black, and if it, like, starts to get whatever, like, not chipped or whatever, whatever happens to it, because I don't really know much about wraps and all that stuff and kind of what happens to if it gets tears in it or whatever, then you can just go and get it redone and like, I can go with like army green if I want to or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that would be totally cool.
I agree. Make them different. Like I said, I do a lot of custom painting. Making things different is what we do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I imagine, I know a lot of people probably get their Teslas painted too, because they only come in like the same five colors.
Yeah. There's not a lot of variant. The vast majority of them I see are wrapped as well.
You know? Yeah. Wrapped.
Yeah, they're all over the place down here. One of my buddies just bought one. And I'm like, it's like the iPhone of cars. They're impressive.
Yeah, it's like my cousin has a Model Y Performance, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna pick you up. We're gonna go to lunch, and I'll take and drive you in the thing. And I've never even been inside of a Tesla before.
They're a trip.
I want to. I'm kind of afraid of the new Model S, though. I'm afraid because it's like the takeoff on those things is like 1.2 G's.
Insanity.
So you're falling slower than you're in that car.
Yeah. Well, I was saying, like, by the time you get through the intersection, you could be doing 60. Just think of it that way. That's insane.
Well, the funny thing is they were talking, like, and people were kind of trying to, like, a dig at Tesla because, like, when it was Motor Trend or Car and Driver or somebody took their car to test the Model S and to see if it could really hit that 0-60 in 1.9. And Tesla was like, you need these X, Y, and Z conditions, like the track conditions have to be a specific way. You got to have like that. There's like a tar they put on the track, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're like, you need that down. And then these specific conditions, it's got to be like within this certain amount of like temperature range, which is, I guess, normal for like race cars and stuff too, I guess. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But then they're like, oh, but still like, and then it got, you know, 1.9 second 0-60. It did, you know, the quarter mile and 9.4.
That's insane.
But then when they did it just on the normal street, it was like 0-60 in like 2.01.
Oh, darn.
So you're getting like, it's basically just that little bit of take up is why they need that little bit. So yeah. Like,
well, I mean, like, any car 0-60 time is based on best case scenarios. Any car's gas mileage is based on best case scenarios.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like you can't make that claim. And at the same time, you know, your Mustang is a 0-60 time that's based on a best case scenario.
Yeah. And I think that's the hard part is like when people don't think about that, like they figure that you're going to be able to get out in your neighborhood, you know, in your cul-de-sac and be able to go 0-60 in 1.9 in your car. Whatever. Well, I really enjoyed having you on tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we had a wonderful talk. I think that's really awesome that we could talk about the UC and everything. And I'm going to point my friend, even though he I can bet you money he won't watch. But I'll point him to this and let him know, hey, you need to check this out. Need to get him to join the group so he can get in there, but he won't. But it's like when you care about somebody and you want them to better themselves, you're like, because I'm pretty sure people, like when I was over 400 pounds, people were like, I don't remember if people, I know people would just say mean stuff, but
right.
But I don't know if they were actually trying to help me or not. If it just came off to me as mean, I don't know. But yeah, I really enjoyed our conversation. I'll have you back again. We'll talk about more stuff.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Of course. Well, thanks again so much for being here. It does mean a lot to me, as always. And we'll talk again soon, bud.
All right.